In this episode of Garden for Life, we talk about what gardeners should consider doing as things warm up. Host Jeffrey Riley joins Master Gardener Grace Florjancic, who's sitting in for Lynn Koontzman.
Grace, thanks so much for joining us on Garden for Life. Good to have you sitting in for Lynn Koontzman.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, April, this has to be a big month for gardeners generally, I'm thinking.
Oh, yes. Everyone's anxious to get out into the gardens, get everything set up for spring. Sometimes we're a little ahead of the game.
Well, okay, so I'm one of the people who's not ahead of the game, and I have to be honest that part of the reason I took up gardening was to make sure I would have some subjects to talk about when we get to Garden for Life, but it's been really interesting and fun, and I learn new things every time, sometimes the hard way. So item one for me is weeds. I took a real hands-off approach to the garden over the winter, which was obviously a bit warm and sunny and therefore conducive to growth at times, so I have a real weeding job ahead of me. So should I have been a bit more aggressive over the winter?
I think some of that depends on what type of weeds you have. If you have any noxious weeds that are going to be really invasive and bad for the environment, getting those ahead of time really helps you control them. But if you've just got kind of your average dead nettle, bittercress, those are pretty manageable on a garden scale to wait a little bit longer. They might reseed for next year, but they're not too bad to manage.
I got mallow and stuff like that. Is that something that's generally not going to be too much of a problem?
It shouldn't be too much of a problem for just mallows.
So when you talk about noxious weeds, are we talking about things like foxtails and some of the
some things
ones?
Like foxtails, blackberries, star thistle's a big one around here too. Field bindweed, if you're familiar with that one. That one seems
Actually,
to be more
that
of
is
a,
one that's out there, yeah. Yeah. That's one I should have gotten out, huh?
Yeah, that one just is in the morning glory family, so it can just spread and shoot all of its rhizomes and runners and can be an aggressive spreader. So being on top of that is maybe one you want to next winter hit.
Okay, yeah, I do notice that it does help a lot if you keep your phone with you and you can do the whole search on image thing, because that's how I know about things like field bindweed now.
Exactly, yeah.
So when doing the weeding, how thorough should any gardener be in trying to get the weeds out down to the roots? I mean, what when we talk about things with runners, for example, are we trying to catch all those in addition to roots?
Right. So in general, trying to get the roots out is going to be the best if it's a perennial weed. So that means it's going to live through this year, next year, and beyond. And if you leave those roots in there, they're just going to get a little bit bigger each year, going to be a little harder to take out. And then there's some things that are more annual, like bittercress. It's got those seed pods that shoot seeds out. That's going to just sprout seeds each year. And if we can get that out of your garden before it goes to seed, you're going to have a lot less to take care of next year. And some of those annuals, they're not going to have the same type of roots, so it doesn't really matter if you just hit the leaves and do a light weeding.
So what's a good rule of thumb over the course of the general non-growing season about how often you want to just sort of visit and see that things are behaving themselves?
Yeah, I think some of that is what your tolerance for weeds is, and are they providing any services? There's some edible weeds like bittercress I mentioned. Mm-hmm. If you're not having any pesticide application nearby, you can throw that in a salad. Dandelions, you can make some tea and put them in salads. Some of the dandelions bloom early, so bees will be visiting them. So kind of balancing out what really you want to do, which, you know, doesn't answer that rule of thumb question, which is very hard to do with gardening.
Yes. Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed is that, you know, it's okay to do this except when that happens, and then it's okay to do that unless this happens.
Right, right. General rule of thumb, if you've got like a raised bed for veggies and you know you're going to be in there digging around, keeping it clean probably is just going to be easier for you in the long run.
Okay, that is the major that's the major takeaway I'll get from this, is that keep it clean more often. We were talking about the bees and the things that attract them, and I'm aware even now as I go out on some of the first warm days in April that pollinators are out there, butterflies and bees both, when I'm trying to do some gardening or just even mowing the lawn and trying to consider what things they can do that I can work around them to do. So there are some considerations there as well.
Exactly. I know maples bloom early in the year, so if you've seen some maple trees in bloom, there's one in our backyard that just had thousands of bees in it that you could just hear that hum. When a cherry was in bloom, you could just see all those honeybees around it. So for right now, a lot of those trees are going to be some good early pollinators, more so than the random here and there pops of flowers in the ground.
Is there a time of year that's like peak pollination? I mean, is there roughly, we know when the frosts are and when this animal arrives and that animal arrives. I mean, is there like one time when it's like you're generally going to see the most pollinators around?
I think for us, it's probably going to be most noticeable early spring right now if you do happen upon a tree or shrub that's blooming when not much else is blooming. So it's kind of got a swarm around it. But they're going to be active all of the warm season from early spring to late fall, and they're going to need food that entire range too. So wherever they find those blossoms, they'll be there.
All right, so encourage the blossoms to stick around so you can have the pollinators stick around?
Yeah, so that is one thing of if you've got like a pollinator patch around your veggie garden, making sure you've got something early and something late so that they have enough food throughout the season so they want to stick around your yard.
I've noticed that's a good idea that we've talked to Lynn about a fair amount is like, you know, try to have some things that aren't necessarily, if you have like a vegetable garden, to have things that you won't eat, but that they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's some things like marigolds, in theory, deter deer. You might need many marigolds for that to really happen. But some things that are less attractive for those bad bugs we don't want or bad animals we don't want in our gardens, but we'll invite pollinators as well.
This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange with Grace Florjancic, who's the Master Gardener Program Coordinator at Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, or SOREC. If you have some topics you'd like us to discuss on a future edition of Garden for Life, by all means, send an email along to jx@jeffnet.org. So talk about your own gardening and the kinds of things that you're doing and what the rest of us should dutifully follow suit along with you as April warms up.
Right. So I'm renting and I've got a smaller community, just one bed plot right now. And I am a little overeager in that side of things where I'm ready to start planting my seeds and I've been ready, but that soil temperature is not quite up to what it needs to be for a lot of these crops to germinate. So I've got my seeds prepared. I've got things laid out where I want to put them. And it's just telling myself, wait a minute, hold back on that.
Are you waiting for the last frost for some of these?
Some of them, yes, like tomatoes and peppers that are going to need a little bit warmer time. I did start planting my lettuce. That's kind of a cooler season, so they'll start to get in, and they've germinated already. Fingers crossed they start growing.
Cool. Can spinach go in about now, too?
Spinach, yep. Broccoli, kale, some of those good crops. I believe beans, peas, they're cool crops, too.
All right, so we have talked in the past about soil thermometers. These are helpful things to have. I mean, if you are kind of going blind and thinking, well, going blindly into the soil, I mean, and just thinking, well, okay, it's warm enough for me, it should be warm enough for it, you will get disabused of that notion quickly by a soil thermometer, won't you?
Yes, and it might be where if you've got seeds you're planting, they just might not germinate in that 1 week, 2 week recommendation time. They probably will be hanging out waiting for those warmer temperatures, and then you might see them germinate later. And if you're transplanting something that's already got some roots, it just might not be growing very much right now.
Will a seed miss the window if you plant too early when the soil's still too cold? I mean, will it not germinate in some cases? Does that happen?
It might just wait to germinate. I believe so long as we don't have any hard, very cold freezes that are like snow-worthy mm-hmm. temperatures, they should be fine to just hang out.
In the Rogue Valley in particular, and I know we've talked to more than the Rogue Valley here, but do we ever get those situations where the soil is like at or near freezing?
In the wintertime, it'll be colder, probably not freezing, but what's kind of considered a light frost is if you're walking on the grass and it kind of crunches and it's just a little bit crispy versus a hard frost where if you try and stick a shovel into the ground, it's kind of solid. We'll get those hard frosts over wintertime, but not really this time of year, just a couple of the lighter frosts.
So what I'm hearing so far is be energetic about your weeding, but be patient with your planting.
Yes. I have gone through and weeded my little bed because that's the one thing I know I can do right now and kind of holding off some of those other things I want to get started. If you are really want to get ahead of the game, you can plant some onion starts. Those are an earlier one, and you'll start to see them sprout up. And you can kind of decide where you want onions sprinkled in. I'm trying to sprinkle mine throughout the bed to discourage some insect pests because onions and garlic tend to have a really strong odor mm-hmm. that not many things like. So I'm fingers crossed hoping I can save some of my other crops that are a little more attractive from those aphids and thrips and get those onions smelling bad in there. We'll see how it goes. A little experiment.
Okay, so the onions and garlic help in that respect, you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have some garlic plant that we put in the ground in October. And that was a question I had, too, about, you know, if it's... I noticed that last year's garlic crop didn't age particularly well, and I just ended up throwing some of it out before it was all gone. Are there things, because now they're kind of far along in the growth process. Is there much you can do to influence their growth?
Yeah, that's a good question. And some of it might be due to the variety of garlic as well. I know one of my master gardener volunteers, she grew, 10 different varieties of garlic just so she could compare their storage quality and their replant quality. And I'm not sure on the specifics of different varieties, but that's a very good question to kind of look into.
Okay, we'll check that out next time. Grace Florjancic is our guest on Garden for Life this time, the Master Gardener Program Coordinator for Jackson County out of the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center near Central Point. Let's talk about pests. That's got to be a big theme for the month. And in fact, I notice it only takes like an increase of about 5 or 10 degrees in temperature before the little clouds of gnats start to come around.
Oh, yes. It's that time of year where once we get our plants going, we will start seeing all of our dreaded garden pests, those aphids and thrips around.
Thrips, that's a new term to me. What are those guys? I mean, aphids I've seen around, but thrips, or what am I looking for there?
Yeah, thrips are going to be a little smaller than aphids. They can fly, but they mostly you'll see them kind of crawling around. They're a really slender, oval-shaped critter. They, like aphids, have a mouth part that sticks their nose and mouth into the leaf, and they suck out the juices. So you might see some little dappled white spots. Sometimes the edge of the leaf will curl. Sometimes young leaves will be deformed. And they can reproduce quite quickly, and you've got a few, and then you've got a million.
Oh, boy, that really...
Similar to the aphids.
Uh-huh. So what kinds of things should you be doing to keep thrips and aphids under control as the days get warmer?
Yeah, one of the big things is... monitoring to start off with, because we want to know what we're dealing with before we go gung-ho. This is what we want to use as our control methods. Aphids are a little bit easier. You can shoot them off with a stream of water, and then they're down on the ground, and ground beetles and things like that will get to them before they have a chance to climb back up onto your plants. Aphids, since they're a little more flight-prone, what I often do is just get a damp paper towel and I'll wipe my leaves and just kind of kill them that way and mechanical smush them. Okay. They're really small to see.
Okay, so just just a little wiping motion gets them all together and wipes them out. Basically.
Yeah.
I want to ask about fruit trees. We've had some real issues for the last couple of years with the dreaded codling moth with an apple tree. And I was just reading that this is the time of year you want to set out potentially some pheromone traps for them.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different methods you can do to control codling moth. And our plant clinic at SoRec does have a codling moth newsletter, and we send out the right times for when you should be spraying for codling moth. I know that there's some... non-spray methods, and usually tag-teaming a few things together works best. So there's, corrugated cardboard that has those channels in it that people can wrap around the base of their trees. Those caterpillars are going to overwinter in the soil and climb up the tree, and they'll get trapped in those segments of cardboard. So that's one way you can kind of reduce the population so you're dealing with less. This one's always a hard pill for gardeners to swallow, is once we have our fruit on our trees, is thinning out the apples. Ah. So there's not a huge cluster rubbing against each other. And I know I'm guilty of the, oh no, but I'm going to eat all these apples.
Right.
But if you're a home gardener and you've got three trees, sometimes it's, okay, let's be honest with myself. How many apples did I have left over last year? How many apples were I giving my neighbors? Was I tired of apple cobbler and pie?
Okay, good. All right. So be ready to thin out the crowd on the apple tree. All good advice. It's good to have you here with us. Garden for Life is an intermittent feature of the Jefferson Exchange. And our guest for this time is Grace Florjancic, who is the Master Gardener Program Coordinator at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center. Grace, thanks so much.
Thank you.